broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
As a karate expert, I will not talk about anyone up here.
It was bad enough that we lost our daughter. And
this November, we need to send a message to all politicians.
While the public interest in this case was certainly surprising.
Bleeping retarded.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. On this show, truth is our bitch. And we take it through the looking glass and take it right on into some parts that, you know, other talk shows just don't want to go near. You know, it's like we go down the deep, dark alley of talk radio. Our affiliate spotlight tonight, by the way, we're very excited. We're back on in D.C. They flipped our, the other station flipped to, what was it? They flipped to Spanish language or sports oldies, that was it. But we've moved the operation, the entire operation, WTNT exists, is alive and well at 7:30 a.m. in Washington, D.C., WTNT, our brand new affiliate, so to speak. And also in Valdosta, Georgia, WDDQ, 92.1 FM, and a couple of great stations along the Phil Hendry Network. Check out philhendryshow.com, live streaming video of the show right now, live streaming audio podcasts on a daily basis. We got two new podcasts up, a classic Phil and an uncensored pre-show rant. And if you missed the first hour of our video cast, you miss an entire hour of the show. We do a four-hour show around here, not three. We do four, one on the pre-show. 877-876-PHIL. Later on tonight, Harvey Weierman joins us on an unbelievably tragic story involving the videotaping of accidents, homes burning down, all kinds of misery. In one instance, there was a videotape that was taken by a paramedic on the scene and sent to the parents. We're going to be talking with Harvey Weierman, an attorney at law, on this kind of unspeakable insensitivity. Joining us right now, though, from Beverly Hills, California, a regular on our show and a sponsor of our program, is Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. We're going to talk tonight about cars.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Hey, Ted.
All right, Bill, hey, thank you very much. And we are at Ted's of Beverly Hills tonight. Come on down for our late night, late tap in the prime rib room. Right after the Clipper game.
About a Clipper game from Staples Center already over there, huh?
Well, yeah, because I'll tell you what happens. A lot of people who follow the, you know, people follow the Clippers from all over town, just like they follow the Lakers. And Don Sterling, you know, owns a lot of property out here and really got his start, I think, in downtown real estate with Don Sterling. So a lot of the Clipper management comes over.
Donald Sterling, the owner of the Clippers.
That's correct, yeah.
Ted, I got you on the phone tonight, not so much as the owner of Ted's of Beverly Hills, but you're involved with the Beverly Hills Automobile Association. It's a club of car owners, high-performance vehicles. Can you tell me a little bit about the club, and then we'll get into your attitude toward this article that appeared in Forbes?
Right. Well, the Beverly Hills Automobile Association was started back in 1997 by myself and a gentleman by the name of Henry Durling. We are both aficionados of what we call HPV, high-performance vehicles. And I'll give you an example of the kinds of cars that we enjoy. The 55 T-Bird. I have a two-tone T-Bird. The Bentleys, the Mercedes, the Jaguars, and so on. Of course, the BMWs. The automobiles that are not just a way of going from one place to the next, Phil, but people like to look at these cars on the road. And I don't know if you've probably been driving somewhere and you see a car, you slow down. And
oh, absolutely. I did. In fact, this past weekend, I saw a gorgeous, you know, what we call a muscle car, but it was a beautiful, beautiful two-tone 56 Chevy.
Right.
And you do. You just sort of stop and watch and because you don't get to see a car like that too often.
Exactly. And that's really what we're about at the Beverly Hills Automobile Association. We're cars that people enjoy seeing so much that we sort of, they're a cut above. The article on, you know, giving tickets to certain automobiles, and I know that you were telling me about the Forbes article.
Well, in the Forbes article, it said that there are cars most likely to be ticketed, like a Mercedes, the Toyota Camry, a Mercedes C-Series, the Pontiac Grand Prix, a Mercedes-Benz AMG, and that kind of thing. Do you think that cars, and these are automobiles that Mercedes-Benz certainly is an upper income car. Do you think cops target cars like yours?
Well, I can tell you that I think that on a level they do. And I think that on a certain level, it's understandable. They may think that because I'm driving a beautiful automobile, because I'm driving that car, I think I'm better than everyone else. No, I don't think I'm better than everyone else. I do think I have an automobile that is a high-performance car, and in that sense, I'm better than everyone else. And let me explain what I mean.
Yeah, do.
What I mean by that is, if I'm breaking the speed limit driving a 55 two-tone T-Bird, how likely is it that I want to destroy that automobile? And I'll, you know, wait for your answer.
No, I don't think you want to destroy the car at all.
Of course I don't. Of course I don't. If I'm driving a beautiful sedan, BMW sedan, the beautiful Vendome Blanc Jaguar, Mercedes, McLaren, or any of these cars, the Ferrari, how likely is it I want to go out and destroy that automobile? It's not likely at all. If you're a cop and you see my T-Bird going down the road, and I may be doing in excess of the speed limit, and to give an example, and the reason why we're talking is because I know I called you. I got a ticket on Sunday. I was doing...
What was the speed? You were in a 55, which every freeway in the metro L.A. area is 55, as it is in probably, I guess, in most cities.
I said I was doing 75. This cop that was a California Highway Patrolman said that I had nudged it over 80. And I can tell you, Phil, that I pay a lot in income tax. I'm obviously a business owner, and why he's going to lie, because he can't, as a cop, afford a T-Bird, and I can.
And why do you say he's lying?
He said I was going over 80 miles an hour, and there is, I'm telling you right now, it wasn't happening. It wasn't happening at all. And so here's my point, and I want to get to this very, very quickly, because I want to be clear. I don't think I'm better than anyone else. But it is not likely that any member of the Beverly Hills Automobile Association or anyone that owns an HPV wants to go out, roll that car, and turn it into junk. It's not going to happen. It is far more likely that someone driving an automobile that one would not consider to be high performance. It's far more likely, for instance, somebody in a PT Cruiser, somebody in a Chevy HHR, someone in a Subaru Baja. Those people want to kill that car because they don't want to drive it.
Are you saying that those cars are embarrassing to be in, or they don't look as good?
They don't look as good. I'm telling you that it is more likely that that automobile is not valued by its owner than my car. So here's what I'm asking. And it was brought on by this.
Let me give our phone number. It's 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Go ahead.
I'm saying an automobile like the kind that I drive, a high-performance vehicle, giving me a ticket is, first of all, it angers people on the freeway because they see a beautiful automobile that is sailing down the freeway and is a joy to look at. Is suddenly now slowed and almost, I don't want to be dramatic, Phil, but almost it's put in chains. It's a beautiful thing that's been chained by the cop. And I could feel it. When the cop pulled me over on Sunday and I was up here at the Sepulveda Pass, I could sense the cars going by looking at a thing of beauty that had been dragged down into the mud.
And you're talking about your car.
My car, yes. And meanwhile, what's going by me on the freeway? Well, there goes a Honda Element breaking the speed limit. There goes a smart car. And the only thing smart about a car like that would be after you've driven it off a cliff. Then that's smart. You know?
All right, I take you don't like that car. It's a small car. But you're talking about relative looks, and you're talking about something that is an aesthetic as opposed to a hard and fast. Do you really honestly believe cops are going to let you, because you drive a high-performance vehicle or a good-looking car, go if you break the speed limit?
I don't think they're going to let me go, but what I'm telling you is they should be concentrating on automobiles that are not as well maintained, automobiles that are obviously not valued by the people that own them, automobiles that it is very likely the people that own them want to roll them or otherwise get into an automobile accident so that they don't have to look at them anymore. Cops should focus more, and on
cheap, ugly cars.
Yes, on cheap, ugly cars. Ticket those people.
You know, this plays, though, right into that attitude that a lot of people resent, myself included, that people with money somehow get away with murder, and the little guy...
No. It's not got nothing to do with that.
No, hold on for a minute. And the little guy that drives doesn't have as much money for a car that say, a Ted Bell has, he gets a ticket.
No, it's got nothing to do with that at all. That is one of those cheap arguments that people trot out when they've been beaten in the argument. And the argument is very simply this. A high-performance vehicle is a thing of beauty. To pull it over and slap a ticket on the owner is the same thing as saying, we don't want people driving efficient automobiles. We don't want people driving cars that are safe. We don't want people driving cars that are taken care of and therefore not a hazard on the road. We want a ticket and punish those people. Whereas someone driving a Pacer or a Pontiac Aztec or one of those cheap, you were mentioning those BMWs. I love the Beamer, but those cheap ass, the cheap, boy, those people get to keep driving down the road, offending everyone that looks at them. So here's the solution. We're asking for a six-month moratorium to look at the problem. In that period of time, anyone driving an HPV, that would be a Mercedes, Jaguar, one of the classic cars, any automobile, a Bentley, Mercedes, any car that is of high value, there is a moratorium on ticketing those drivers because those are cars that people take care of, and they redouble their efforts against some of this junk, this rolling junk out there. And I'm going to tell you, Phil, within 6 months, you know what's going to happen? The death toll on the highways will plummet. The number of insurance-related claims will plummet. Everything relating to bad, whatever's bad about a car, plummet.
Boy, that's a, have you got any statistic to back that up?
Yes, I do. I got pulled over because my car runs too good. And as a result, I got a ticket. So that's one of the statistics.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Ted Bell.
Look, but the driver of a cheap, ugly car, these eyesores on the freeway, it's more likely to be a reckless driver because they don't care about what it looks like. You understand?
No, I see that that's your point. But the point that you are, I believe, once again, we're talking about entitlement versus people who don't have a lot of money.
That's always the argument they trot out.
Of course they're going to trot it out. If I don't have a whole lot of money and on top of everything else, I didn't buy a car that was expensive enough, and I'm getting ticketed.
No, if you're driving, you don't understand, Phil. If you drive a car that is not that expensive, you don't care that much about the car. And there are some people who not only don't care about their car, they don't care if someone dies as the result of them buying that cheap junk. That's what I'm saying.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Should people who drive high-performance, stylish automobiles, expensive automobiles, Mercedes, classic cars, should there be a moratorium on giving them tickets, moving violations, because obviously they care about their automobiles enough to drive safely, and should they redouble efforts, the police, at ticketing people who don't spend a lot of money on cars, the thinking being they don't care whether their car is in a wreck or not. 877-876-PHIL. Your phone calls with our guest Ted Bell up next on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Next hour, Harvey Wireman talking to us about this YouTube as a repository of these terribly tragic accident tapes. The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Oh, God. God, was that long.
Of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
On a tell you, we've got a Caesar salad at Ted's of Beverly Hills. You will cry. That's how good it is. You will thank me with tears streaming down your face when you get our Caesar dressing. Fantastic.
Here at Ted's,
and we blend in the anchovies.
We want to put our meat in your mouth.
Mm, that sounds good.
Oh, I want to tell you, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but a boss, we call him boss, our head chef, has a Caesar dressing, Phil, where we blend the anchovy in. And it is, a lot of people say they don't want anchovy, I understand that, but do people want the anchovy flavor? Yes, they do. And we're very, very proud of it.
I gotta get it to get that. That's great. We are talking about the high-performance vehicle.
Are we done with the commercial?
We're done with the commercial.
And I don't want to offend you, Phil. It sounds like you're blowing over it a little bit. Yeah, you said the words, yeah, that's great. As if you mean it, right?
Yeah, of course I mean it. I love the salad.
Why don't I believe you? I'm sorry.
Ted, we're on the air right now, and we're talking to our listeners.
I understand that.
And we're talking about the high-performance vehicle you're saying should not be ticketed, a moratorium of 6 months. People that drive expensive, finely tuned, beautiful automobiles are obviously not driving them to damage them. People that are not driving those kinds of cars don't care. I want to ask you before we go to our calls, what do you say to a person who says to you, how dare you, I can't afford a better car, but I do like to drive my little car that isn't all that expensive and may not be as good-looking?
Well, I think it's a very good question, Phil, and I would say to that person, whoever they are, and I'm hoping they're a young person, if there's someone in their middle ages and they're still having to drive a car that is obviously a not only an eyesore, but one that you know is, they don't care whether they run it through a bus stop, or I don't know, but I would say, what is holding you back? What is keeping you from being a responsible citizen in terms of how you operate a motor vehicle and purchasing an automobile that is a high-performance automobile that is going to sail down the highway as an example? That's what when I get out in my 55 T-Bird, and I love this two-tone T-Bird that I have, I see myself as a rolling example of just being someone. I'm an example of being a human being, driving a beautiful automobile, driving responsibly. And I'm hoping that someday people who drive these PT Cruiser, I don't know what you call it, are going to get with it and quit endangering the rest of us. I've got to sit there and get a ticket while I see this guy go by smiling and waving and eating whatever he eats out of a paper in the front seat. And there's... It just doesn't make any sense to me.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. So, people that drive these high-performance vehicles are obviously a more responsible driver. Here is Rod on the Phil Hendry Show with Ted Bell. Go ahead, Rod.
Your caller, man, you are so narcissistic. This is so funny. You know what? A driver of an automobile is all the same. Everyone is the same. You're going to be treated by the same, by fire, the police, and the police officer pulls you over. Yeah, I work in fire EMS. Been in fire EMS
for 20
years.
What has fire got to do with me getting a ticket? I'm just saying, why would a police officer pull over a man who has an automobile that is an example of a well-maintained machine that I don't want to get into an accident? Why would I want to get into an accident and wreck a beautiful automobile like that? What's he doing pulling me over?
The tires are irrelevant to why the officer decided to go ahead and pull you over.
I know why he pulled me over. He pulled me over because he's some California highway patrolman making his $40,000 a year, and he resents me.
Oh, no. Hold on for a minute. Now you're talking... Ted, how can you attribute to a police officer? That almost sounds like you're accusing the guy of something illegal.
Well, what is he... I don't get it. When he's got... You know, there's an old saying, I don't know where the gentleman's calling from, but out here in California, there's an old saying, you know, you got 500,000 Mexicans you can pull over. What did you?
Can we keep this out of the alley, please?
All right. Well, I
that's
I don't
really
want to
funny because, as a matter of fact, I am of Hispanic descent, and I drive a high performance vehicle, a 1969 Indianapolis. Whatever. Okay.
I'm not talking about you. What do you mean? What kind of car do you drive?
You happen to mention nationality. I don't know what relevance it bears with.
It's a joke.
Who is in the public service sector serving the public if he decides to go ahead and pull you over because of whatever activity you are or are not doing, it's his right. He is upholding the law.
Can I ask you, you said you had, what kind of car do you have? Because this is the point I'm trying to make. What kind of car did you say you had?
1969 Camaro SS Pearl White Indianapolis Pace model.
That's a beauty. Now, are you going to go?
It certainly is.
Are you going to go out? Are you going to go out and destroy that car on a Sunday drive, going really fast and ramming it into a truck with gasoline? No.
The point that you have been making was that there should be a moratorium for people who drive high performance vehicles.
Exactly. Exactly. But I wasn't really thinking about Camaro. But that qualifies, I guess. I don't know. Is it a 5-speed?
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Ted of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Come on down to the Ted of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. We've got meatloaf. That's right, jalapeno meatloaf, the mashed potatoes, and the baked potato treat just in time for Halloween.
Here at Ted's, we want to put our
meat in your mouth.
And this portion of the Phil Hendry Show brought to you by Ted's of Beverly Hills. Ted Bell joins us as we talk about the Beverly Hills Automobile Association, which you're the president of, Ted, and all of your members have these. What do you call a high-performance vehicle?
Well, any car, Phil, that is high-performance, that is any car that's going to be minimum 250 horsepower and above. We like three. We'll take 250. Now, my T-Bird, which is a 55 T-Bird, started out as a 225-horse engine. Had some modifications done, and the automobile is now HPV. But more to the point, I think...
Let me look. Our number, by the way, is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Talking to Ted Bell. Go ahead.
Well, more to the point is that the moratorium we're calling for on the high-performance vehicle, not giving tickets to the high-performance vehicle, is so that we can make it very clear to the public at large that when you take the reins away and honor the men and the women that drive these beautiful cars, you're going to see the flash of this, the two-tone flash down the freeway one more time. And Forbes saying that they only pull over Mercedes, once again, there's everybody kissing Mercedes hind end, and I get so sick and tired of it. And
look, Ted, this is not a popularity contest. You're talking about safety on the roads, all right?
I understand that, Mr. Hendry. I understand that probably better than you do, because I drive an HPV. And I'm telling you that an automobile like the kind I drive, if I drive it at 80, I'm safer going 80 in my T-Bird than you are going 40 in your Jaguar.
I don't believe that.
Sir, I've been in car rallies. How many car rallies have you been in?
Car rallies?
Yeah, that's right. You don't know what a car rally is? I race, even though it's not professional, I race competitively at car rallies. All right, so I know what an automobile can do, and I refute. Don't even tell me that I am not safe at 80 and you are at 40. No way. No way, no way, no way.
877-876-PHIL. I'll go over to a phone call here. Joe in New York, listening on WWRL. Go ahead, Joe. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, very good, sir.
I'm just calling because I feel really insulted by this guy talking about, come to New York, and you're going to see if you drive over the speed limit, you're not going to be pulled over. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, I have a PT Cruiser.
Come to New York. I'm talking about Los Angeles, California. You know what I'm talking about? L.A. We got freeways out here. What do you have? What do you got? You got a street there.
They've got interstates in New York.
I do. Well, they do have. Yeah. What are you talking about? How about the 95?
Well, you don't have.
How about the 95? What is it?
Okay, that's
what
one. That's one. All right, one.
Yeah.
We've got 19 freeways out here. This is the Indianapolis 500 out here.
It doesn't matter the car you drive.
Look at. Let's stop. Hold on for just a second, Joe. Ted, you don't argue with a man about the kind of roads in New York. I mean, driving on the streets of New York is a challenge.
Well, you know that, right?
I take a cab when I go to New York. I'm not fooling around with that. What I'm telling you is that when I'm and you drive a PT Cruiser, sir. I'm sorry, and I would ask anybody, what keeps you from owning something better? That's the question that I ask young people when I speak
to schools. That's a ridiculous question. Let me tell you. Drive a Mercedes, drive a PD Cruiser or an Acura on a Lexus, it doesn't matter. Go over 55 on an interstate, you get pulled over. Period. But this is nonsense,
really?
And you are insulting people for driving a car they can afford.
You know, sir, you know full well you don't always get pulled over when you go over 55 on any freeway or expressway in this country.
The police
have to pick and choose. Why are they picking me and letting you go in your PT Cruiser? I'll tell you why. Because
why?
they want to make my day a little bit worse because I have...
Yes, what that's the, baloney.
He just said...
Let me do it, okay?
And, sir, with all due respect, you have an accent, and you said spit limit?
Yeah.
Hello? What do you mean spit limit?
Speed limit, yeah.
Oh, okay.
What's the problem?
You said
you
speed
have a problem
limit.
With my accent?
No, I didn't understand something you said. Now
yeah,
we're on the same page. I'm just asking you, why do you insist on making life for me miserable? I get pulled over, and you go sailing by in your PT Cruiser
care.
laughing at me.
I am driving the car I can afford, period. What do you want me to drive?
The guy's, is he supposed to pull over and feel sympathy for you, Ted?
What he's supposed to do is back me in my effort to help those of us who drive these high-performance vehicles to keep the road safe, keep the tickets off of me, and he should absorb a few more himself.
Until he buys a car that is a far more, a better tuned...
A safer automobile. PT
oh,
Cruiser.
My goodness. Oh, my goodness.
You're begging for the jaws of life.
Listen,
yeah, can I ask you something? Do you enjoy the jaws of life? Is it something you saw a documentary on?
That's a beautiful car. That's a beautiful car. And I wouldn't
trade
it for anything else.
The jaws of life is not a car. That's what they cut you out of a PT Cruiser with when it's wrapped around you.
Okay, you know...
My point is simply this, that if individuals want to drive cars, that once you do hit something, it'll take the jaws of life to get your head released from the dashboard. In my view, that's not responsible.
877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Henry Show. Going to another phone call. Thank you, sir, for your call. Here is Steve in Los Angeles listening on KTLK. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, hey there. How's it going?
Fine. Yes, sir.
You know, just briefly, I'm a claims adjuster for an auto insurance company, and... You know, I see plenty
perfect,
of accidents
perfect.
That happen with high-performance cars.
Excellent.
So, you know, whatever argument you're making, Ted, is not really backed up by what I see every day, and I've been doing this for probably 11 years.
I don't understand what's hard to get. I don't see anything you've got to say that's going to counter me. I mean, if you're going to ticket me, if I'm going to be subjected to the same kind of police... scrutiny as individuals who don't, put as much into their automobiles, I'm not going to be any safer with my driving. I don't see where you, what your point is.
Are you familiar with Laurel Canyon?
I've never, oh, the street? Yes.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I was going to work on Laurel Canyon, and I got pulled over for speeding. And it was a $500 ticket. So, you know, I drive a Honda Accord.
Well, that's good. That shows
you
a little improvement. That shows some improvement.
Whoever that cop was,
promote him. Promote him. You know,
I see a lot of...
Did the cop do a good thing? Yes, he did. Are you doing a good job with your claims adjusting? Probably not. I don't know whether you are adding it right or...
What do you mean, adding it right?
Well, he's got... Something wrong with this guy.
There's nothing, Steve. Thank you very much. What's that?
I was going to say,
I don't buy what you're saying. You're a claims adjuster. You're driving a Honda Accord. No wonder you hate me.
Nobody is using the word hate. No one is speaking in terms of the word hate.
Well, I can sense from this guy he can't stand me. Isn't that
right? I was going to say something.
Isn't that right? You hate me.
Well, what I was. Well, I was going to say that, you know,
Did you get hit with something heavy as a kid?
All right. Steve, thank you very much, sir, for your call. I appreciate it. Very good call. 877-876-PHIL.
What do you mean, very good call?
The gentleman was nervous. You made him even more nervous.
Well, you know, Phil, you better, if you're going to come on a talk radio program, and I've done quite a few of these with you, I think you got to step up to the plate. And I would suggest that you're a screener. Get people that have got maybe a little bit more hanging there than just something that a bird would feed on. And I think you know.
Thank you very much for your advice. That gentleman was doing fine. You were making him nervous. People are nervous when they call talk shows. 877-876-PHIL. I endeavor to make people feel welcome. Catherine in Tucson, Arizona, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Catherine.
Hi. This guy yes. really gets on my nerves. The first thing I would like to know, if he's going 80 miles an hour, and the person in front of him stopped suddenly, is
yes.
he able to jam on his brake pedal quick enough?
Yes,
the 8 car lengths
yes,
that are required to avoid
yes,
having
because
accident.
Of the,
I don't think so.
Yes I am, because of the kind of car that I drive.
I don't know
because
about
of the car
foot.
That I drive. Because of the car that I drive, it's a HPV, high-performance vehicle. It comes to a... If I don't need 8 car lengths. That's the thing that people don't understand. I can
what
do
about,
80, and I can be right on your
what
tail.
About your foot?
What about my foot?
I would also like to know what restaurant you own so that I can boycott it, because I don't want to contribute to your snottiness.
Ma'am, I'm trying to answer your questions. And
I think the lady's got a good point here, Ted, and this is what I was afraid of. There's an arrogance that a lot of people have when they own these cars.
I don't have any arrogance. The lady asked me. I don't need 8 car lengths because my car is high performance. The brakes that I have are called, and I mentioned the Jaws of Life, which is what the emergency crews, these brakes are called Jaws of Life brakes. I can be 2 car lengths behind her doing 85. When she hits the brakes, my car will stop
almost
on a dime.
By itself, assume that your foot does not react quick enough. Are you also high performance? You personally?
Well, ma'am, my foot is connected to my leg, which eventually goes to my brain, so I don't have to rely entirely on my foot. I rely on my brain, and then the foot is... I don't understand...
Please.
She's saying, Ted, what if you do not see her?
But what if a guy, let me ask you this, what if a guy that is 10 car lengths back doesn't see her? Did you hear about the pileup and the Thule fog there on I-5 in the San Joaquin Valley? Hello? Those were people that were paying attention, and they had a 50-car pileup. So, I'm Ted Bell. And why am I Ted Bell? I own Ted's of Beverly Hills. Why do I own that? Because I know what I'm doing when it comes to a restaurant. Why do I know that? Because I know what quality is. And why do I know that? Because I drive a quality car. And I'm not going to allow my T-Bird, 55 T-Bird, to have anything to do with somebody's PT Cruiser.
Well,
that's
and I hope you get lots of quality tickets.
Well, ma'am, you're another one that hates me. I don't understand the hatred tonight, Bill. The hatred that is seething from people because I said I have a T-Bird, two-tone interior. And what else did I say I had?
Never mind. Thank you very much, Catherine, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. We're going to take a break here.
Hold on for a minute, because I'm the sponsor of the hour. And what I'm getting from you is that there is a... you're feeling, and what I'm getting...
Will you just hold on for a minute? 877-876-PHIL. Ted Bell, who drives a high-performance vehicle, a number of them, and because it's such an expensive car, a well-tuned car, a well-maintained car, do we really need to give him and other people like him tickets when we know they're not trying to wreck their cars? Why don't we give more tickets to people that are driving the less expensive cars? 877-876-PHIL here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Next hour, Harvey Wireman joins us to talk about these YouTube videos depicting horrible accidents. He is right now representing someone who videotaped his neighbor's home. I believe it was his neighbor's home, or is this the one? Oh, it's the old man that drove his car through a vegetable market. Wait till you hear this. Harvey Wireman next hour on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yes. Of course you think of steak, but do you ever think of appetizers? Are three different kinds of hummus? I got Arabs coming in. I'm joking. It's delicious, though.
That's good.
You know what hummus is? Let me hum you a few bars. Good to be with you. I'm working a little humor into that. I don't think it's funny, but...
You got hummus as an appetizer.
Oh, yeah, and we have that flatbread. Oh, people love it. And we also have the tuna tartare. Of course, we've got the usual sirloin tartare. But we're really working on the appetizers, and I think people are going to come out of their shorts. And probably the wrong way of putting it, but I think people are going to enjoy it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Talking with Ted Bell about automobiles that are more frequently ticketed by the police, and they do tend to be higher-end cars. And we had that one gentleman on who was a claims adjuster who said high-end automobiles are often involved in crashes. You're saying if the police didn't ticket guys like you who drive the Mercedes and the classic cars, you'd drive safer?
I most certainly would drive safer if I know I'm going to be ticketed like every other person. And I've talked to a lot of them tonight who hate me. And
I think we got to get rid of that word.
Well, there is some problem people have with me because I have a nice car. If I'm going to be ticketed just like all of them, what's the point of me driving in a manner that befits an automobile that is high performance, which is the two-tone T-Bird I told you I've got? If I told you about the two-tone T-Bird, right, Bill?
Yes, you did.
All right, and then I've got a candy apple red BMW, and these are cars that are HPV. I drive them, you know, responsibly, but if I'm going to get a ticket, what do I... I don't understand what you're asking me.
Let me get to a phone call here. 877-876-PHIL, talking about tickets, high-performance cars. Sabrina in Portland, Oregon, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Ted Bell. Go ahead, please.
Okay, I drive a 2005 Mazda 6, and I'm a young adult. I paid my car off completely, which I'm very proud of, and I can tell you with full confidence in my own experience, I've been hit by almost more BMWs on the road than any other car. It's almost like people who drive high-performance cars feel as though they're entitled to cut you off within an inch of your life.
Well, now, I have this to say to you, Sabrina. I don't think Mr. Hendry, and I know I haven't, been, quote, hit by anybody. Why are you getting hit all the time?
Well, don't speak for me.
Well, when's the last time you got hit?
Well, I don't get hit, but what I'm saying...
No. This lady's getting involved in a lot of accidents.
No,
I haven't been in an accident in four
I'm
or five years.
I'm an aggressive driver.
Sure.
I haven't been hit since I've been driving. Fortunately,
you just said you get hit more
by... No,
you said that you get hit by
hit.
More...
You've been hit. I've been cut. Today I saw a man in a Mercedes get into a screaming match with an old woman when he ran a stop sign, and almost killed her.
How do you know what happened? Were you watching the entire thing? Why
were
you prejudiced against the Mercedes?
I was going into the store, and the stop sign was in the parking lot. I was right there. I could hear the screaming match. She told
you
him
were
there was a
where?
Stop sign, and he made it a point to roll down the window and scream at her. It's almost like you feel entitled. I'm not poor at all.
No, ma'am, I think that you resent the fact that you can't afford a BMW. That's what upsets you.
Okay, but you say it's a safety thing that people can afford to get into crashes with their beat-up cars, but actually,
right.
The safety standards for a Mercedes is a lot different than the safety standards for a Ford Taurus. So the guy in the Ford Taurus has to worry about losing his life, and you have to worry about scratching up your car.
That's because I'm smart and I buy a safe car and I'm going to be punished for that? I don't understand.
But if anything,
you are the one who has
no. less to lose in an accident than someone else because you're
I've got a more expensive car. I have a more expensive car. I've got more to lose.
You're saying
that
you're saying these people who drive beat up cars are more inclined to get into crashes because they don't care about their car.
You admitted to it. You almost hit three cars, right?
Wait a minute. The lady said she almost got hit.
She just admitted to trying to hit three cars, didn't she?
No, she didn't.
No.
She said she almost got hit.
No, that's not what I heard. I heard her say that she targeted three rich guys. And excuse me for saying this, Sabrina, but when a young lady like you says she targets rich guys, you know, all right, enough said. What I'm looking for here is an apology from people who assume because I have a HPV that I'm all of a sudden go ahead and abuse me. Now, the young lady said that she saw a guy in a Mercedes almost run over an old lady. All right, let's believe her for a moment. What did the old lady do that might have provoked that man? Did she see that?
It was a stop sign with a crosswalk. She was crossing the street.
She was crossing the street, right? She jumped right in front of him as he was trying to move forward.
It's a crosswalk. You stopped.
Well, you can't just jump in.
What driving school
no,
did you go
no,
to? My gosh,
no, you do
I,
not stop.
I've been driving way less than you, and I know
all right,
more.
So if I go, let me ask you, if you're driving down the road and I have a crosswalk and I jump right in front of your car right at the last second, you're supposed to stop and not hit me, right?
Jump in front of his car. You're supposed to stop. Do you do a rolling stop? Maybe that's why you're getting tickets so much.
No, I get ticketed because my car wants to do 80. It has to do 80. It needs to do 80. And the cop pulls me over because he figures I can afford the ticket where you get to roll on by because he knows you and you're his girlfriend.
No, I don't break the law, sir. I don't go over the speed limit. I don't need to. It's not an ego thing.
Oh, this is pointless. I've talked about this for years, and it's pointless. It's pointless for me to talk about it.
Phil Hendry.
For years, I've talked about it.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I think this is one of the most cynical ads that we have seen in a long time.
As a karate expert, I will not talk about anyone up here.
While the public interest in this case was certainly surprising.
Dad, I know it would be a big responsibility, but that's what you're always saying.
I think this thing is preordained.
I hate Jews. World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show knows what it's talking about. Every night it's through the looking glass and beyond, baby, where some talk shows, maybe all talk shows, wish they could go, but they can't. So that's that. 877-876-PHIL. Welcome back to our show. This hour, Harvey Weierman. Pro bono attorney. I say pro bono attorney. Harvey's been around a long time, but he is retired. And he's going to be talking to us tonight about a story that's just outrageous. Parents outraged that a firefighter videotaped their daughter's car crash death and then posted it online. You know, you wonder. You wonder where some people were raised. I mean, I remember my folks used to use that term. Where were some people raised? You know, did you ever hear did your mom and dad ever say to you, what, were you raised in a barn when you didn't close the door? Because, I don't know, my generation of parents, my parents, they still had farms. So when we didn't close doors, they'd say, were you raised in a barn? Meaning the door to the barn, I guess, is kept open. But they would always talk about how were some people raised? You know, what kind of values do we put into these kids? I know some of them just might be the scum of the earth. There's not much you can do about somebody that's wired wrong. But a guy is a firefighter. A firefighter. And he takes this and he posts it online. And these two people have to see this, the death of their daughter. So we're going to talk about that with Harvey Weierman and a case that he's currently involved in. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, our website, philhendryshow.com. And we have a very special announcement we are going to make this week. We also have a very special announcement on a giveaway we're going to make this week. We have very special announcements. And so go over to philhendryshow.com, check out our live streaming video, live streaming audio, podcasts, archived material, downloads every day, some 7-8 months of shows. Since we got a hold of our material and redesigned our website, we have turned about 8 months' worth of shows into downloads. Now understand, we have 13 years. 13 years worth of material. So we are doing what no other website has ever attempted to do. We're making that material downloadable so you guys have it there on your mobile, wherever you want it. Speaking of mobile, you can watch the show mobile tonight on your Evo or your Android phone. And soon to come on demand for iPhones. 877-876-PHIL. Harvey Weierman is an attorney at law out of San Marino, California. He's a former Marine, has worked pro bono in his retirement years for a variety of groups, including the ACLU. And Harvey joins us on our newsmaker line this evening. Harvey, how are you?
I'm very good, Phil, and I appreciate it.
And Harvey, the headline here says, parents outraged that a firefighter videotaped their daughter's car crash death, posted it online.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I agree with you. I think it's impossible to fathom the motivations of some human beings, and certainly that man deserves to lose his job, and the family, no doubt, is entitled to damages commensurate with this outrage. You know, death, other than birth, perhaps, and sex, may be the most private moment that a human being can reasonably expect. Many of us die public deaths, but mostly death is a very private event. Even in an automobile accident, it is a singular event in life. And to take that moment and turn it into someone's amusement on YouTube, and for a firefighter to do that, is beyond anything that I can. And I am a combat veteran. I've seen all kinds of horrible things in this world, but I've never seen that kind of insensitivity.
Here is Jeff and Lucretia Kempson. They're talking to CBS News that they are understandably devastated by this video.
It was bad enough that we lost our daughter, and now to have to deal with something like this is just, it's just beyond words.
When I close my eyes, it's not fair that that video is what I see of my daughter.
Somebody had mailed it to him, Harvey.
Yeah, well, the individual that mailed it to them was actually their brother-in-law, a former brother-in-law who felt that the family should see it. I don't know whether that was the best way to bring it to the attention of the family, but I don't think there's any culpability at the brother-in-law, but it was it was very difficult, and it's devastating.
Tell me, though, you are involved in a case right now that is similar.
Well, I don't think it's similar. I think we have similar circumstances, but there are differences, and this is what I wanted to bring out to you and your listeners this evening. And my client is an 86-year-old man who lost control of his car. And that is something that is going to happen with elderly drivers. But he lost control of his automobile. It was in Santa Ana near the Newcomb Vegetable Market, if you know the area. Now, he was enfeebled. His grandson was with him and had a digital video camera and was video recording this. And the tragedy of this, Phil, as you know, with any elderly driver, is that people were very badly injured.
You said he drove it into a market.
It's a street front market, and he lost control of the automobile. The accelerator seemed to have stuck, and the car entered the vegetable mart, and several people were injured. One man had a broken neck.
And, oh, God.
Well, there were no fatalities, thank God.
That's good.
Now, the grandson had a video recorder. He's in the car. So the video recording of this is from the point of view of a passenger, the grandson. He was not able to contact any of the people. Now, understand that the police came. My client is 86 years of age, and he's an elderly man, and there's no point in harassing him any further. And so he was released to the family, pending the investigation. They wanted to reach out to the injured people, and the video was then put on YouTube. Now, there's a difference between that and what this scum firefighter did. He put it on YouTube as a way of having some laughs. This boy put the grandfather driving his car into these people on YouTube to reach out to anybody that might have been injured and share with the families, because he didn't have their addresses. So, now that's not heartless. What was heartless was what this firefighter did.
All right, well, let's talk about this. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. Your client is an 86-year-old man who had a grandson with him who was video recording this?
Yes, he was in the car with him.
And video recorded his grandfather hitting, and did he, no fatalities, but he hit and injured a number of people.
Yes, that's correct. But that, we are not admitting culpability or liability, I should say, because the automobile, we think, was at fault. And we also certainly feel that Newcomb Vegetable Mart has been on that corner inviting trouble for years. You have an open vegetable mart at the corner of two major streets where there is vehicle traffic every day in the excess of 6,000 or 7,000 automobiles a day, and the and you've got a vegetable bin. You're begging for a car to drive right in there.
And well, who is to blame for this elderly man then injuring these people?
We're going to claim that it's the market should have taken reasonable precaution to protect the interior of the vegetable area, and the people themselves are asking for it when they're wandering around vegetables at the corner of the two streets.
And are you saying that the people that got hit were responsible for their own injuries?
I'm saying that my client is not. You can spin it any way you want.
And let's go on to this videotape. This kid...
It was not a videotape. It was... Understand there's a difference. It's a video recording.
I'm sorry. It's a digital video recording.
It's not digital. It's called digital.
A digital recording.
That is correct. And he put it on YouTube. Now, people said that he was being cruel. And he said to me, Mr. Wireman, I put it on YouTube so that people might recognize themselves and would, would send us their address and we would say that we're sorry while not admitting liability.
Now, and you believe him?
Yes, I do believe him. I absolutely do believe him.
How old was this boy?
He's 23 years old.
And he had a digital camera and recorded these people being injured, put it on YouTube as a way of finding out who they were.
That is correct, yes.
Did anybody call the family?
Yes, they did, but they called, their attorneys called, threatening to sue. So we are saying that they are ungrateful. They were in the vegetable mart, and when the video was made of them to say, look, is this, you know, we'd like you to have your address because my grandfather, even though you jumped in front of his car and...
Well, they didn't jump in front of the car.
Well, but the fact they were in the vegetable mart.
All right, so you're saying the fact they were in this open vegetable mart and they were open to any vehicular trouble that comes their way.
That is correct.
And yet, and still, the grandson put this video of his grandfather mowing these people down.
Now, you didn't mow anybody down, Mr. Hendry, and I resent the press depicting it.
All right, well, the grandfather hitting people, put it on YouTube as a way of saying, of reaching out. If you're in this video, we'd like your name and address. It was my grandfather that hit you.
We're not saying that. We're saying if you're in this video, we'd like your name and address to say we are sorry that we were in the same area in a car that you were in, but you weren't in a car, we were. And so we're sorry that you didn't have... You see what I'm saying? I can't allow my client to admit culpability, but what we can do is we can say we acknowledge that you were in that vegetable market and we acknowledge that you shouldn't have been there because our car was in there.
And I don't know how you can say that we acknowledge you shouldn't have been there, our car was in there. If you're looking at a...
Mr. Henry, you don't know the particulars of the case.
If you're looking at a vegetable market on the corner of a street, what should be in a vegetable market, people or cars?
The way they built this vegetable market, you can't tell.
Well, what do you think their intent was?
It doesn't matter what their intent was. It's what they did. And what they did is build a vegetable market at the corner of two busy streets. You ask me, are there human beings supposed to be there or automobiles? And I have to draw the conclusion that both cars and people belong in that vegetable market because it was completely accessible to the car.
And the kid posting it online, you think was a... You believe his story when he says he was trying to reach out? He wasn't putting it up there to exhibit it?
No, he was not putting it up. Why would you put a video of a car mowing human beings down?
And you didn't want me to use the word mow.
I did not want you to use the word mow. I'm using it.
because I'm an attorney and I have an understanding of these terms. But why would you put a video of that online for kicks unless you're a sick human being like that firefighter?
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Mr. Wireman's client, an 86-year-old man, drove his car into an open market at the corner of two busy streets. The man's grandson not only recorded it with a video camera, but put it on YouTube. But in this case, the kid put it on YouTube as a way of reaching out to anybody that was hit by his grandfather. And meanwhile, the grandfather's not to blame. The market is to blame for being an open-air market at the corner of two busy streets. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Should people put these things on YouTube regardless what their intention is? Maybe the guy intended it to be a benign thing. Maybe the guy intended it to be a laugh. Why don't we keep these accident videos off of YouTube? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
You didn't ask me those questions when I was on.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. Joining me is Mr. Harvey Wireman from San Marino, an attorney at law. We're talking about this, the parents of this girl that was killed in an automobile accident over the summer. A firefighter on the scene had a video of this accident. I guess he had a video of the results of this accident. A 30-second video shows close-up images, including this young woman's body, and two responders can be heard talking about what they see, according to Channel 5 in Atlanta. And this jackass put this thing on YouTube. You have said, Harvey, that it is an abomination to do that.
Without question, but I think you're trying to compare that. You're trying to compare what they did to my client's grandson. And
well, your client's grandson was videoing his grandfather crashing through a video market, injuring people. I understand there were 10 people injured, one man with a broken neck. Somebody else was multiple injuries, internal injuries, and he put this on YouTube.
He put it on YouTube, as I said to you.
Yeah, as a way of reaching out. That's the story he gave you. But the video has a music track to it. It's got a title called Armageddon 2.
You can't judge from the title of this video or from the music track or anything else, Mr. Hendry, that you want to attribute to it, that my client's grandson was not intending to reach out to people that were injured by way of his grandfather's car entering this vegetable market so he could get some names and addresses of people.
Why would he want to reach out to them?
So that they could find out how they're doing. And
what, maybe to pay damages?
No, there's no damages to pay because we are not claiming responsibility, and you trying to maneuver me into admitting that is not going to, you know, we're not going to get very far. All right.
I'm not trying to maneuver you into anything. I'm just saying I don't understand the difference. It seems to me that this boy was being trivial, heartless. He was callous.
In what way? Because he had a soundtrack? Because he put music to it?
He put some Metallica soundtrack to it, calls it Armageddon 2. And then he included some of the audio from the clip where we're hearing people's voices, people screaming, and the sounds of crashing.
That is correct. And he did that as a way of accentuating that it was just as shocking for him and his grandfather as it was for the people that were hit by his grandfather's car. And the case...
Are you being sued?
Are we being sued? We're suing. We're suing the Mart. And we are also suing the people that were hit by...
So your client who hit these people, you're filing a lawsuit.
He's suing these people that were in the mart at the time. And the reason why he...
Why is he suing?
If you'll allow me, Mr. Hendry.
Go ahead.
The reason why he is suing them is because his automobile malfunctioned. These people decided they wanted to be in a vegetable market that is open to the street and vehicle traffic. In so doing, they allowed themselves to be in a place where naturally an automobile
is going to be driving through the vegetable market at some point, and they will be hit. They'll attempt to sue him, and that we find to be usurious and frivolous. And so
they'll attempt to sue him. So you're suing as a result of the fear that they'll sue.
In a matter of speaking, yes. And let's see, what else? You were talking about the video. So we are going to sue them so they don't sue us. And we are going to say that the video was put on YouTube as a way of being compassionate and reaching out in a spirit of caring. And that the sounds of what you said are the sounds of people screaming and the crashing sounds are part of the fear that was going through my client and his grandson as this automobile, through no fault of their own, was out of their control and was now driving into this vegetable market to, it would appear, kill people. Now, the car that they were driving was a 1969 El Camino, and this is a Chevrolet, so we will bring that automobile into evidence as one more factor in the multiple factors that victimized my client and his grandson that day.
And the video camera, how did that camera victimize your grandson?
Trying to be a smart ass.
No, sir, but you know, you're saying the car, the people,
the video camera, thank God he had the video camera to record what happened to him and his grandfather when that car went into that vegetable market and ran those people over. Thank God for that.
All right, we'll be back with Harvey Wireman, 877-876-PHIL, and your phone calls, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Thank God for that camera.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
On the line is Harvey Wireman here on the Phil Hendry Show. And don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. You can look at live streaming video of our show right now. Harvey joins us to talk about a client of his involved in an automobile mayhem. I mean, the car went out of control. It went into a storefront, injuring 10 people. His grandson, sitting in the driver's seat, videoed this entire event and then put it on YouTube. With a soundtrack, with a title that said Armageddon 2, with the sounds of the crashes, and the argument you're making is that it was actually a very compassionate thing to put this video on YouTube.
That is our argument, Mr. Hendry, and we resent you comparing it to this firefighter video.
Well, that's the case of a videotape taken of a girl who was dying by a firefighter. Why don't we go ahead and separate those out? What I'm trying to determine right now is this videotape you call compassionate of these people in the market being hit by the car?
Let me tell you how fortuitous it was that this young man had the video camera. One of the people in the store was hit and slid across the hood of this gentleman's car and hit the windshield. The boy had the camera showing clearly this individual launching onto the hood of the car and then into the windshield, and it very clearly shows me that this individual was hit, but then tried to exaggerate how bad it was by sort of pulling themselves up and launching themselves into the windshield. And I said to that individual's attorney, I said, you can stay home because I'm going to rip you apart if you bring that into this lawsuit.
All right, so this is a video that has nothing to do with compassion. You're using it as evidence on behalf of your client.
No, I'm not using it as evidence on behalf of my client. I'm just saying it happened to show that while we're sorry these people got hit, it just happened to show that one of the people that got hit tried to make himself look like, you know, oh, he really got hit bad. He barely got nudged, and he launched himself onto the hood like he's, a stuntman. So no, it was compassionate, but also yes, in that case. This guy told the lawyer, I said, you stay home, and if I see any part of you at the courthouse today, they won't be able to recognize what they find.
That's how you guys talk to each other, huh?
That's how I talk to this guy, yeah.
877-876-PHIL, as we talk to Harvey Wireman here on the case of YouTube videos that show horrible accidents. Here is Rob. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Rob?
Hi. How you doing? I want to know
good.
How long this market's been there. How long has
the market
been in business on that same corner?
How long's the market been in Santa Ana?
It opened in World War II. It opened in 41, 42, something like that.
So it's a long time.
A very long time, yeah.
So then that tells me that the city has allowed it for this long. So does that mean the city's responsible for the driver's actions also?
Well, I suppose. But right now, we are holding the market responsible because they haven't taken any steps in the 60-plus years that market's been there to put up any kind of a protective barrier, a wall, to glass in or wall in the market. It's one of these open-air markets that I'm sure you've seen.
So have they had this kind of accident before?
No, you're not going to do that. You're not going to, because they haven't had that accident before, then you're not going to pull that.
You know? I'm not trying to pull anything, but I'm wondering why they would have to put up any kind of retaining wall or anything else if they hadn't had this accident before.
I don't know, and it doesn't make any difference to me. All I know is I'm looking at an open-air market at the corner of these two streets, and you take an 86-year-old man driving his car, the throttle gets stuck. The next thing you know, you got some joker launching himself into your windshield to try to make a few dollars. You got all kinds of things going on.
All right, Rob.
So that tells me then that I can go out jaywalking, and somebody hits me in a car, and nobody's responsible for it. I am.
Yes, that's right. When you jaywalk, you are responsible. Good call. Anything else?
How long was the guy videoing the accident?
Let me ask something. What makes you think you can jaywalk and not be responsible for being hit by a car?
If you walk out in the street in traffic,
you're responsible.
All right, we've determined that. Now, what was your question, sir?
Well, two segments ago, he said that people and cars could possibly be in that market at the same time.
Yes,
so cars
exactly.
And people could be in the cars at
because
the,
of the way
street
that,
at the same time.
That's right. Because of the way that market was designed, cars can be in there. And I don't think you're supposed to design a market so that cars can be in it. You can
absolutely.
Design a street. However, cars are supposed to be in streets. And that's where you didn't know that when you walked into a street and got hit by the car.
Well, he didn't get hit by the car, but I understand your point. 877-876-PHIL. So what's the next step here in this process, you and your client and your lawsuit? In other words, if you have this 86-year-old man who's not responsible, you have a grandson that isn't responsible, he videoed it, and he's not responsible even for putting this video up on YouTube, showing people being injured, screaming, being thrown across the hood of a car, the market's responsible, the people who got hit are responsible.
That is, unfortunately, what I've come to, and I didn't want it to be that way. I don't think that my client wanted it to be that way. And
can you tell me the name of your client?
No, I can't. No, I will not. No, I can't. And I don't. I will not.
And you don't want to give me the name of the grandson?
No.
When did this happen?
I don't want to give any information to you or anybody about when it happened, how it happened, nothing else. I don't do that. This other guy with the firefighter, if they want to be stupid, they can be stupid.
All right. So please continue. So the people are responsible?
Yes, the individuals that went into that vegetable bin, I don't even know what it's called.
It's a Newcomb Vegetable Market, right?
It's a vegetable market, yeah.
And well, do they have anything else there?
I don't know. Phil, why don't you go shopping there someday?
I'm just wondering, is it a grocery store?
What difference does it make?
I guess it doesn't make any difference. I was wondering in terms of how many people are there.
There were enough people there. It was a Sunday morning, so you're going to have a lot of people there. And they're going to be picking through the vegetables and doing all kinds of things whatever you do. So the car went into the vegetable market. The reason why the car went into the vegetable market, it was invited into the vegetable market by the way that the vegetable designed it. or not the vegetable designed it, but the way that it was designed by the vegetables, by the man that wanted to have a vegetable.
By the man that wanted to have a vegetable market.
By the man that wanted to have a vegetable market. He designed it in such a way, I'm sure he felt that it was an open air and a very, wonderful experience to stroll and look at the vegetables. But the way he designed it, in point of fact, was he was basically asking cars that the last I checked belong on streets. He was asking the cars to come on in and drive through my market.
And you say the design of this market is that blatantly inefficient, shall we say?
Well, it's inefficient if you don't want your customers to get killed, but it's efficient if you do. And that's something else that we have to determine. Was this a guy that knew sooner or later someone would die in that vegetable market, and he would eventually be thrown in prison and wouldn't have to deal with owning a vegetable market anymore? Was he suicidal in that sense? Now you have the people that were hit. They're in a vegetable market, walking around at the vegetation. I mean,
at the vegetables?
Well, they're not walking at the vegetable. They're coming at the vegetable, but the vegetable is staying.
They're looking at the vegetables.
Yes, they're wandering with a they're wandering in the vegetable, or
they're going through the aisles.
The aisles of the vegetable, and so they're wandering around, and they probably don't even know why they're in there. And you have to say, well, no, this is a vegetable market. They go, oh, that okay, thank you, because I forgot.
And well, so they're just idiots, as far as you're concerned. So everything that is going on here,
no, they're not idiots, no.
And where was your client going?
That's none of your business.
See, everything you're saying is it's none of my business about the client. It's none of my business about his name. It's none of my business about the video recording.
No, it isn't. I'm looking at the culpability of the people that allowed themselves to get hit by an automobile that my client had no control over. So the people, if you'll allow me to finish, the people are at the vegetable bin, and the people there are looking at vegetables when a car is coming in, and they say, okay, you know, I'm not surprised by that.
What if someone said they were surprised by it?
I would say they're perjuring themselves.
So if I'm at that place, you, anybody, and we see a car coming in,
I wouldn't be in there.
All right, but let's say anybody else, and basically what I'm saying is, oh, here comes a car. I knew that all along.
That is exactly correct. That's the argument we'll make to the court. The people that were inside the vegetable container, or the store is what I mean, were there knowing that sooner or later they would allow themselves to have a car hit them while they're in this asinine situation with vegetables. I don't even call it a store.
Well, I don't know how you're going to get a judge to.
Well, I can tell him.
Well, before we take our break, I just want people to know in the pleadings here, you don't even want to call it a store. You say that it is, like you said, it's a situation with vegetables.
I'm not going to call it a store because I don't think it is a store. I think it was a catastrophe with vegetables in it. I think it was a catastrophe with people and vegetables and cars mixed in.
And nobody's to blame.
Except for the ass that called it a store once.
All right, Harvey, good luck.
Well, you don't mean that. You want me to lose, don't you?
I don't know, man. I mean, whatever justice is, let justice be served.
Yeah, sure.
God.
Well, you've said that before.
All right, well, then, have a nice life.
You too.
877-876-PHIL. So it's not even a store, huh?
Well, he can't legally call it a store because they're suing him.
Boy, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You can't legally call it a store until such time as the lawsuit's finished.
If he called it a store, then what does that mean?
If he calls it a store, then he's admitting that the car
shouldn't have oughta not have been there had it been a store.
Yeah.
but because it's a catastrophe with vegetables and people mixed in,
then the car being in there makes sense.
All right, I've never heard such an argument in my life. We'll keep track of that, though. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Military recruiters are told they can start accepting gay applicants. That and more on the Phil Hendry Show coming up.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
The vegetable, and I had one more point I wanted to make about vegetables. If you blend wheatgrass in a shake, it's a delicious thing.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back. We have our news hour with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman coming up here in a moment. And our website is philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. It's the strong right arm of the Phil Hendry Show with live streaming video and live streaming audio, as well as podcasts and downloads every single day. We have two new podcasts available to you. One of them is our classic Phil podcast, free of charge. And this one is called The Cripple Spot with Ted Bell. And then we have an uncensored pre-show rant, which is part of our subscription package, and it is from our pre-show. So check it out, philhendryshow.com. 877-876-PHIL is our number here. And we welcome aboard, again, a brand-new affiliate in Washington, D.C. It's kind of the same affiliate, but we're at a different dial position, WTNT 730, if I'm right about that, Jace. 7:30 on your dial, right? Yes, 7:30 a.m. WTNT. The military is accepting openly gay recruits for the first time in the nation's history, even as it tries in the courts to slow the movement to abolish its don't ask, don't tell policy. Isn't that interesting? So you don't ask and you don't tell, even though they're now accepting openly gay recruits. Now, this is a news story, and again, you know me. I always like to cite who the source of the story is, but I don't seem to have on this sheet anywhere any indication of who wrote this swill. So we're just going to...
Well, it's like ABC or something.
No, it's Yahoo News. Now, the reason why I'm asking for the source, Bud, is because... this is a obvious paradox. Why would you accept openly gay recruits and at the same time continue to enforce don't ask, don't tell, or at least try to slow the movement to abolish it? Is this information that should not be in the public domain? Is this a scoop? Is there someone that Yahoo knows inside? Are the people that run Yahoo gay and therefore they know everybody that's enlisting? You know, what's going on?
Probably Yahoo got gay people coming in.
That's it. Yahoo's got gay reporters that are enlisting.
Yeah.
Sure. The military is accepting openly gay recruits for the first time in the nation's history, even as it tries in the courts to slow the movement to abolish its don't ask, don't tell policy. At least two service members discharged for being gay began the process to re-enlist after the Pentagon Tuesday announcement. How do you get discharged and then you're allowed to enlist? Meanwhile, a federal judge in California who overturned the 17-year-old policy last week rejected the government's latest effort to halt her order, telling the military to stop enforcing the law. Government lawyers will likely appeal. With the recruiting announcement, the barriers built by an institution-long resistance and sometimes hostile to gays had come down. The movement to overturn the 1993 Clinton-era law gained speed when President Barack Obama campaigned on its repeal. The effort stalled in Congress this fall and found new life last month when U.S. District Judge Virginia Phillips declared it unconstitutional. Gay people have been fighting for equality in the military since the 1960s, said Aaron Belkin, executive director of the Palm Center, a think tank on gays and the military at the University of California, Santa Barbara. It took a lot to get to this day. The Defense Department has said it would comply with Philip. Well, you know, this is a whole... we can keep talking about this bullcrap all we want. You know.
Why call it bullcrap, man? It's a very important issue.
I'm going to tell you right now what I said on the pre-show and what I said off the air and what I said on the air and what I'm going to say on the air again, and I'm going to keep on saying it. The American people don't care. The American people are fine with gay people being in the military. They have moved past getting upset about this. The case has been made. The American people have seen the sense in dropping this prohibition. This is an argument now between just these yammering, jabbering jackballs back in Washington about a handful of talk show hosts and some really weird-ass people that like to call the talk shows. That's about it.
Well, I mean, they're worried that a gay is not going to be able to fight good.
Oh, will you get out of here with the gay won't be able to fight? Who is, and what difference does it make?
A lot of people calling in.
Well, they're idiots, aren't they? Gays won't be able to fight good. Good God Almighty. You know, how do we know, man? How do we know how gay people fight as opposed to, for all I know, the better fighter is the gay guy? We don't know, man. You know, you go to that Vietnam War Memorial and you look at all of the names of those men on that war memorial to those who fell in the Vietnam War. How many of them are gay names? We'll never know, will we? How many gay people died in World War II? We'll never know, will we? How many gay soldiers? We don't know. There's apocryphal. You know what apocryphal means?
Yeah, like bad.
Yeah, it's appalling.
No, not appalling. Apocryphal.
Yeah, it's like apocryphal. You're full of it.
No, you ain't full. It's apocryphal means it's a story. We don't know if it's true or not, but it's a story that gets passed down. There are stories out there of gay soldiers in World War II, gay soldiers in World War I, how they related to each other, how they talked to each other. Do you know that one of the features to the modern gay community, if you will, one of the aspects to its development was World War II? So many gay men and women were coming together in the military by the millions, and they were meeting each other for the first time, and they recognized that there were others like themselves, and forming these friendships and these bonds in the military during World War II and World War I, that when the war ended and everybody was released from service, they go back to their cities, pack up their stuff, and head either to San Francisco or New York or wherever everybody is hanging out. So the war itself, bringing together so many millions of people, brought together millions of Americans of like mind and like orientation. And that, in its own way, is another positive aspect, a positive development from the greatness of our country during that period, which unfortunately or fortunately has not been revisited. 877-876-PHIL. What are you looking at?
Well, what do you mean? You want to have another war or something?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes I think maybe another war would do us good. A good war. A war that we can all agree on, which I guess we'll never have one of those again. Jimmy McMillan of The Rent Is Too Damn High Party upstages Andrew Cuomo and Carl Paladino at last night's debate for New York governor. We'll find out about just how interesting that was when we come back next hour at our news hour on a world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I represent The Rent Is Too Damn High Party. People working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week.
This is one of the most cynical ads that we have seen in a long time.
While the public interest in this case was certainly surprising.
Oh, sweet lady kisses.
You're a fascist.
Your wife said the same thing.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch. Where we head to the looking glass and beyond. Every night on this show. Taking you someplace. Most talk shows, all talk shows, any talk show. Man, they couldn't go if you held a loaded gun to their... 877-876-PHIL and online at philhendryshow.com. Yes, the groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show here into another hour. Brand new day. It's a Wednesday morning. What are we doing tomorrow morning, bud?
I got to go take the trash out.
Exactly. That's when the guys from Waste Management come around, and we cannot be late because they have the franchise, and Wayne Huizenga is a brilliant guy. The cat that owns or did own Waste Management also owned Blockbuster Video. Now, what does that tell you?
Man, are you kidding me? Now, that guy's rich. You know,
of course he's rich. He owns the Miami Dolphins, too, or did. I don't know what he owns anymore. But I find it to be one of life's humorous realities that the cat that owns the garbage company also owns Blockbuster Video.
Yeah, but that's very predictable commentary on, you know, oh, he owns garbage. And he also in the garbage that they have in a movie and everything, you know.
Oh, okay, well, excuse me, Judith Crist, you know.
Well, I mean, he's making a good point.
Yeah, he's making a good point. You're right. It's predictable. Sorry, bud.
I mean, you know, not every movie is bad.
Well, I'm not saying it's bad. You know, I mean, maybe I should have. All right. So you're right. Okay. What the reason why he does that?
Yeah, I know. He likes to rent stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you already told a story.
Okay.
Just move on.
Yeah, I'm gonna move on. Don't worry about it, man.
Here,
I got the Tom Bosley story.
By the way, Bobby Dooley said that Tom Bosley and Barbara Billingsley died on the same day, like John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And then
I understand what she wrote. I'll do it. Thank you very much. Bosley and Barbara Billingsley did not die on the same day. They died one day, 2 days, 3 days apart. Miss Billingsley, God rest her soul, died over the weekend. Mr. Bosley, I guess, passed on Tuesday. That's not the same as John Adams and Thomas Jefferson.
Pretty close, though.
Anyway, happy days, Dad. Tom Bosley died of heart failure Tuesday after a battle with lung cancer, according to his wife, Patricia Carr. He was 83 years of age. Bosley's 50 years as a television actor included roles on dozens of shows, but he was best known as Howard Cunningham, the patriarch of a 1950s Happy Days family, a show that aired for 11 seasons starting in 1974. Remarkable on so many levels, Tom's insight, talent, strength of character, and comic timing made him a vital central figure in the Happy Days experience, said Ron Howard, who played his son Richie. A great father and husband and a wonderful artist, Tom led by example and made us all laugh while he was doing it. That's a very nice series of comments there from Ron Howard. Henry Winkler, who played the Fonz on Happy Days, he said that Bosley was a family member both on and off the stage. We acted together, traveled together, and played charades together, Winkler said. He was a loving husband, a doting father, and a fantastic grandfather. He will be so missed but never forgotten by the Winkler family or the world. We do have some audio here. It's just a little bit of audio from the Happy Days days, man, in an episode here of Happy Days. It's called The Lemon. Here is Tom Bosley as he offers some fatherly advice on whether his son should buy a car.
Dad, I know it would be a big responsibility, but that's what you're always saying I need. It'd help me mature. It'd help me learn how to take care of things. You're going to be depending on me someday, you know.
Don't threaten me, Richard.
Howard, at least listen to what he has to say.
Me listen? You know, when I was a kid, my mother used to tell me to listen to my father. Now that I'm a father, my wife tells me to listen to my kids.
A lot of boys Richard's age have their own cars.
Listen, let's just forget I ever even brought it up.
Now, look, Richard, you're old enough to make your own decisions. All I can do is offer you advice. I suggest that you finish high school and college, get yourself a job, and then you'll have enough money to buy yourself a decent car. That's my opinion. But you weigh the pros and the cons, and I'll go along with whatever you decide.
Terrific. I'm going to call Potsy and tell him we can get the car.
I'm glad he's not rushing into this.
That's funny. Bosley's professional acting career began on stage in the 1950s, including a Tony for his role as New York City Mayor LaGuardia in the 1959 musical Fiorello. I could see him as, you guys don't know what he is, but
yeah, and that guy LaGuardia, I don't know.
He had just completed chemotherapy treatment for lung cancer, which was diagnosed 5 months ago when he suffered heart failure, according to his wife. Oh, boy. Funeral arrangements had not been announced, but the family's asking people to make donations to their favorite cancer charity. Before he worked in Happy Days, he was a regular on Love American Style, Night Gallery, The Debbie Reynolds Show, and dozens of other TV shows. He stayed busy through the 1980s, including several Love Boat episodes. He co-starred in 19 episodes of Angela Lansbury's Murder, She Wrote. He played the title role in the Father Dowling Mysteries, a series that ran on television for 4 years, beginning in 1987. And his distinctive voice was heard in numerous broadcast commercials and animation productions. So what do you think about that? I remember one funny line where Richie wants to go off with his friends, and he says, Dad, we want to go, and I think they wanted to go on a road trip. Didn't you go off someplace with your friends when you were a kid? And he goes, yeah, it was World War II. So.
Yeah, that's good.
Uh-huh. Don't you think it's like Jefferson and Adams?
No, I don't think it's like Jefferson and Adams. Fed-up flight attendant, rest in peace, Mr. Bosley. Fed-up flight attendant Stephen, because I'm now about to talk about some other guy that Anyway, fed-up flight attendant Stephen Slater pleads guilty, avoids jail. DA believes Slater was drunk and suffering from mental problems.
Just like John Adams.
Will you get out of here?
This is this guy that everybody thought was the greatest thing since sliced bread, remember? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the time, everybody, I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, well, I told you then, and I'm telling you now, the guy's a mess. At the time, I said he was a mess. How did all of a sudden this cat turn into some kind of a hero? You know? Anyway, the fed-up flight attendant who waved goodbye to his career at a spectacular exit down an emergency chute made a soft landing in court on Tuesday. Stephen Slater, 38, avoided jail under a plea bargain that requires him to undergo counseling and substance abuse treatment for at least a year, and he also must pay $10,000 in restitution to JetBlue. Yeah, that guy's got trouble, all right. Slater spoke calmly as he pled guilty to criminal mischief and attempted criminal mischief. Afterward, a smiling, upbeat Slater said, well, here's what he said.
While the public interest in this case was certainly surprising, unexpected, and encouraging, at the end of the day, I am a grown adult and must accept responsibility for my actions. Therefore, I'm looking forward to continuing on, moving forward with my life. And I am very grateful to the court for making these arrangements, which will allow me to do so.
Slater admitted he pulled the emergency chute on August the 9th on a flight from Pittsburgh after it landed at Kennedy Airport. He went on the public address system, told everybody to F it. And a passenger who was rude to him, he said, you too, and the horse you rode in on. He grabbed a beer, slid down the tarmac on this chute, ran off. He had a bandage on his forehead, apparently got hit with a piece of luggage before takeoff. Took a hostage, ran it. No, he didn't take a hostage. Anyway, Slater's departure made him a folk hero to put upon workers everywhere who have fantasized about quitting in a blaze of glory. I guess that was it, huh?
Yeah, I'll take this job and shove it.
Take this job and shove it, yeah. He was a topic on TV shows, on the internet, and on the front pages of newspapers, with many cheering him for standing up to the often inhospitable world of airline travel, and others accusing him of childish and dangerously reckless behavior. He was initially charged with criminal mischief. Well, you know how that goes, man. But so now this guy's life, after being feted and after being having his ass kissed and everybody telling him what a marvelous guy, he is Mr. Nobody, man.
Yeah, are you kidding me? People are going to want to write a movie about him and everything.
Who's going to write a movie about him? You know something I don't know?
No, but I think it would be interesting.
To write a movie about him, huh?
Yeah. They wrote a movie about that one guy, Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, that was pretty good. You see that one with Tom Hanks?
Yeah, I saw Catch Me If You Can. What's that got to do with this guy?
They can make a movie about anybody, because everybody's got a story to tell.
Yeah, they can make a movie about you, bud. I'd like to see him make a movie about you.
Really?
Yeah.
Who would play him? I bet they'd get that little midget from Love Boat to play him. And
shut up!
Well, get out of here. Make a movie about you. I don't know. Everybody does have a story to tell, and I bet you could make a movie about everybody's life. I mean, a movie, everybody that lives, a great movie could be made from their life.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. I honestly do. I think every human being on Earth, anybody, man, you, me, Bud, anybody, if you sat down and interviewed people long enough, you could make one hell of a movie out of their lives. You know, that was the whole point of that movie, The Player. You know?
Whose life was that about?
It wasn't about anybody's life. It was a movie made by Robert Altman about the studio, about making movies. And this one guy who plays this jackass, he says, we don't need writers. We can get stories from anywhere. Look, the newspaper. And he was kind of making the point that they didn't need writers. You could just get stories out of the newspaper. And he was pulling all these jackball ideas out of the newspaper. But
yeah, but that's where you get all your ideas.
I'm doing a daily radio show, man, way different than doing a movie where you got 3 years to make it. But the point that I'm making here is you need writers, but it's true that the material that you can pull from to make a movie is everywhere. And there's not a human being out there, not one, that you couldn't make a fantastic movie out of their life.
Well, are you just saying that to kiss butt?
What do you mean kiss butt?
Because you're making everybody in the audience think they could have a movie and everything?
No, I'm telling you for real, man. If I had the time and I had the actual inclination, I'd write a movie about your life, bud. I'd write one about you, Robert, but I don't have the time, I don't have the inclination, I don't have the interest, and both of you guys bore me. So,
all right.
Thank you. All right, 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show. So there, I'm glad we were able to get that out. There are rumors of a reality show for Steven Slater. Wait a minute, man. Oh, there are rumors of a reality show for Steven Slater. Stone Entertainment, they made The Mole and The Man Show, both of which are off the air. I'm kidding. The Man Show's still on. They've approached Slater, but in what way they've approached him? From behind? Anyway, the Vatican declares Homer Simpson a Catholic. That coming up and more on The Phil Hendry Show.
It's The Phil Hendry Show.
Nobody laughed about it.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I want Jason to hear what a good version sounds like.
When I was a little girl, I had a rag doll.
Yes, this is...
Only doll I've ever owned.
Tina Turner singing River Deep, Mountain High.
Now I love you just the way I love that rag doll.
This is the good version, not the Glee version.
Now
better.
No, Glee ain't better.
Yeah, man, that's what I figured you'd say something like that.
What?
Yeah, I figured you'd say something like that.
I can't hear you, man.
Turn it down, man.
No, I'm not going to turn it down. No, it's just I saw Rance on Twitter over the weekend. And, he says, I don't care what anybody says. The Glee version of this is better. I thought I was going to cry when I saw that.
Yeah, but I don't know. See, everybody, you know that song. Nobody know that song.
Yeah, why can't we hear the Glee version?
You can hear it. I'm just telling you, it's not better than that. And as much as I don't like Billy Joel, the Glee version of, well, actually, to be honest with you, Glee improves Billy Joel, so I shouldn't say. Glee's same-sex tryst raises eyebrows. Oh, here we go again with another parent group. Now, I understand, and I just had this discussion off-air with Mr. Rance, because he's a huge Glee fan, to the point where everything they do on Glee, he thinks is great. He thinks it's the greatest acting that's ever happened, the greatest music that's ever happened, the greatest directing that's ever happened, the greatest writing that's ever happened, the greatest everything that's ever happened, the greatest network. And he sent him a script, and they sent it back, and he said, well, their writing isn't all that good. Anyway, last week's episode of Fox's Glee started with two female characters, Santana and Brittany, engaged in a makeout session on a bed where the two make reference to scissoring. Though the scene indicates they've been making out, the episode merely shows the two characters kissing each other's necks. Now, at least one conservative media group disgusted by it, the Conservative Media Research Center, is concerned that a supposedly a family-friendly program would become a disgusting gay teen sex romp. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, me too.
See, we had the discussion, and you know me. My argument is, why do we sexualize kids in culture? Well, it is different when we're talking about a TV program that is representing the life of teenagers. Teenagers make out. Teenagers have sex. I don't think we need to show teenagers having sex, but we certainly have to acknowledge that teenagers are in that part of their life where they're discovering that, and they have intimate affection for each other. Okay. And gay teens, too. And what they showed was that reality. Two girls kissing each other's necks, and they made a reference to scissoring.
What's that?
Well, figure it out, man.
Yeah, figure it out, man. This is scissor, and this is scissor. And you put them together and look like that.
Oh.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Great. So.
Yeah, so if you put.
Shut up, man. Okay, you got it?
Yeah.
Scissoring. Now, they made a reference to it. They didn't do it. So what is the point of that scene? In other words, we see affection between two lesbian, underage, teenage lesbians. It's not graphic sex, it is the kissing of each other's necks. So we don't even see lip locking. And then they make a reference to some form of lesbian physical relating, you know. And
you look at you're all nervous about it and everything.
What do you mean I'm nervous about it?
You're all like, ooh, certain things.
Hey, you know, bud, I'm going to haul off and belt you in a minute.
Well, what are we getting nervous? Are you anti-lesbian?
No, I'm not anti. You know what's making me nervous, man? The fact that I may punch your ass out right now. That's making me nervous. I'm trying to be tasteful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you're all like, they were scissoring.
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah. And what else? What else?
I don't know.
No, go ahead. Tell me. Tell me how I'm blowing it. What else did I do?
Well, just, you know.
You know, the fact that I don't think Glee is as great a show as you think it is and Rance thinks it is, huh? I'm supposed to apologize for that?
No.
Huh? The Conservative Media Research Center is concerned that a supposedly family-friendly program would become a disgusting gay teen sex romp, they said with a big smile. Dan Gaynor, VP of Business and Culture at the Conservative Media Research Center, he doesn't draw a salary because, quite frankly, how do they make money? Anyway, Dan believes that Ryan Murphy, the show's creator, spends his days fantasizing about teen girls, well, in much the same way I do, scissoring on the bed in what the media tells us is a family-friendly show. Murphy, by the way, the guy that is the creator of this show, is gay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, huh? So, Mr. Gaynor, you know, like so many individuals that engage in a public discourse about gay people, gay sex, gay reality, or just the reality of life, like so many of those people, you wind up sounding kind of dumb, you know? You wind up sounding like you don't know what the hell it is you're talking about. He's fantasizing about teen girls scissoring. The cat's gay. He don't fantasize about teen girls other than how to dress them. He fantasizes about what he wants teen girls to wear to the fashion show or something. That's all he's doing. Anyway, Gaynor went on to call the episode blatant propaganda. Aha! Blatant propaganda. That means it's one more recruiting tool for the gays. And twisted. He's been twisted. These are two girls that kissed each other's necks. Now, on the surface, it's really nothing. It's two girls laying there kissing each other's necks. However, when you show two girls kissing each other's necks and then you say they're lesbians and then you throw in scissoring, yes, people's imaginations go wild, like Dan Gaynor's. Murphy's mind isn't going crazy because he's gay and he doesn't fantasize about teen girls doing it with each other unless he's fantasizing about teen girls, you know, remembering their lines. So he doesn't have to sit there long after they're supposed to go home having people doing line readings because they can't get the damn scene done. That's what he's fantasizing about. That's his nightmare. Dan Gaynor, on the other hand, you know what, Dan? The more you open your yap, the more we all know how you think, man. Fantasizing about teen girls, the only thing going on about that is you, man. Huh? Do you understand what I'm saying? You, Dan! Anyway, Dan Gaynor went on to call the episode blatant propaganda, twisted, but he liked it. He's been an outspoken critic about... No, it doesn't say that, but, you know... He's been an outspoken critic. They're all outspoken critics, aren't they? They're all...
Yeah, every guy's all outspoken, and he's outspoken. Everybody outspoken.
As opposed to a critic that doesn't say anything.
Yeah. I'm a critic, but I've never said nothing to anybody about it.
Yeah, you're a inspoken critic.
Yeah, I'm inspoken, man. So I've seen Glee, and I hate it. I'm a major critic, but I've never said nothing, written nothing, talk about it, nothing.
Oh, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more on Glee, more on Dan Gaynor. And the moron, Dan Gaynor, when we come back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I'm an outspoken critic, though.
Good, you can be an outspoken critic.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
All right. Well, anyway, here is the Glee version of said song.
When I was a little girl, I had a rag doll.
Blows.
No, it doesn't.
I've ever owned.
Blow, blows, the blows, it blows.
No, it doesn't.
I love you just the way.
Blow, 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 blow.
Shut up, man. I want to hear the song. Shut up. This song's great.
It blows. Blow, 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 blow.
Shut up.
Blow, 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 blows.
You're
a jerk, man, saying that. Oh, relax. That's pretty good, though. You're right.
Great song, man.
All right, hold on. All right, you're right. That's a very good song.
Yeah, you're talking about it blows.
Now I can't find River Deep Mountain High by Ike and Tina Turner because I clicked and I dragged it over into the Tonight's file, and it's gone, man. It's gone, baby. It's gone. That's all right. We'll find it. Anyway, you're right. That's a very nice song. But you're never going to get me to believe that Tina Turner's version doesn't kick ass.
Yeah, you're going blow, blah, 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 blah.
I'm screwing around. Got it. Get a sense of humor, man, will you? You're always messing with stuff that I like.
Yeah, but I never come in and go blow, blah, 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 blah about a music you like.
You guys have done enough damage. Don't worry about it. I could name a million times you cats have come in and screwed with stuff that I've tried to do. By the way, speaking of iTunes, here is the top 10, the list of the top 10 singles and albums on iTunes this week. Number one, Back to Remember, Taylor Swift. Number two, Like a G6, The Kastariks, Far East Movement, Dev, Just a Dream, Nelly, Just the Way You Are, Bruno Mars, Only Girl in the World, Rihanna, Raise Your Glass, Pink, Pink's Back, Club Can't Handle Me, featuring David Guetta from Step Up 3D, Flo Rida, DJ Goddess, Fallen in Love, Usher, Dynamite, and Bottoms Up, Trey Songz. Albums, Charleston, South Carolina, 1966, Darius Rucker. BTR, Big Time Rush. I Am Not a Human Being, Lil Wayne. Which, by the way, we played the Lil Wayne on one of our Sunday Night Phils, and boy, is he foul.
Yeah, well, Lil Wayne, man, he's real, man. He keep it real all the time.
You can call it keeping it real. He's as foul as they get. What's that song we played, Gonorrhea?
That's great. I love that song. It makes me feel good about life and everything.
Gonorrhea makes you feel good about life, huh?
Yeah.
Free Wind, The Far East Movement, Sigh No More, Mumford & Sons, Recovery, Eminem, Doo-Wops and Hooligans, Bruno Mars, The Age of Ads, and The Rock and the Tide. Oh, yeah, and finally, number 10, All That Remains with their album, For We Are Many. So that's the top 10 singles and tunes on iTunes this week. Number is 877-876-PHIL, and of course, our website is philhendryshow.com. Now, here's a story. I don't know whether or not this is for real. Is the guy doing this because he wants to get reelected? Nonetheless, you know he's got to have some friends. He's making a lot of friends. It's the sheriff there in the Chicago area sheriff of Cook County, which is the city of Chicago, Cook County. Sheriff Tom Dart has halted foreclosure evictions. And I'll tell you with good reason. The sheriff, considered a leading contender to be Chicago's next mayor after a series of headline-grabbing initiatives, announced on Tuesday he's ordered deputies to stop carrying out mortgage foreclosure evictions, and this will be the second time he's ordered that in 2 years. He halted the evictions after they acknowledged, okay, the three leading lenders acknowledged some employees signed off on foreclosure documents without even reading them. Now, that's the latest in a long list of scandals now affecting this foreclosure situation. This is a, you know, the thing that I find to be outrageous, it's a brazen thing that knows no end. Now, at the beginning of the show tonight, we were talking in our uncensored rant hour. I said, look, TARP was basically a gun to the head of the American people. And it wasn't a gun put there by the government. This was a gun that was placed to the government's head, and the government turned around and stuck the gun to our head. What was it? Well, we can't lend money because we don't know how bad this situation is. So we're not going to be moving any money around, and the money is just going to cease moving in this country and worldwide, unless we get some relief, because we need to have you back us up, because we don't know how much of a mess we made out of this. All right, so what do you need? Well, you know, now comes the money. Now, that's understandable, and things happen, and people mess up, and bad loans are made, and okay, we get it. Going back to the early 1980s when they started making some of these subprime loans, and no, it wasn't just about the fact that Barney Frank was trying to get a lot of low-income loans to the low-income people. It was a lot of that, and it's a whole lot more. So those mistakes were made. Let's move on, shall we? Okay, great. But they don't want to move on. Here's what they want to do. They want to get their TARP money, and then they want to just continue business as usual. We've got all of these bonuses to pay out, and we're going to expand our office. I got $1 million I'm putting into a brand new toilet that I've got that me and the other executives can crap in. And then, of course, I need to wait, what do you mean? Well, hold on, man. Well, you never said, you know, you didn't tell us. So all these games get played, right? Now, if you're a mindful individual and you run a bank and you know that there is such a thing as perception and you realize the gravity of the situation you're in, you take steps with your employees and with the operation. Say, look, we better pull some of this stuff back. So let's get smart. There isn't one guy that did any of that. Let's start acting our age around here, and this is a very serious situation. Some of you jackasses made some very serious miscalculations with these loans. We packaged all kinds of stuff up. We sold it off. We sold people. We didn't know what we were selling, okay? We are on the hook for a lot of money here. Now, none of this stuff happened. We had to go back and say, well, what are you doing with these bonuses? And what the hell do you think you're doing with your new office? And what the hell is with the junkets? What are you people doing? Well, nobody told us, you know. All right, now what do you think they're doing? Just like the guy said the other day, they are rubber stamping these foreclosures as quickly as they were rubber stamping the loans they made originally. In other words, the very act of just, you know, rubber stamping these loans, creating this enormous a group of toxic loans that were bundled up and sold off to lender after lender after lender. The next thing you know, nobody knows what they're worth. Nobody knows what they're not worth. And we could be a half a trillion in the hole worldwide on this stuff. So all of this crap gets organized, at least to the extent that they get their TARP money. But now what are they doing? Now they're rubber stamping all of these foreclosures. Now you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck. I thought I heard the president say not too long ago, we're gonna do some loan modification. We're gonna give people mortgage relief. Did you hear that? I thought I heard that. You heard about anybody getting any of that? Half of the people that are in these mortgage relief programs are dropping out of them because they're a sham. I have heard them described by an officer with a major bank. Somebody that I know personally, someone who works in loan modification, he has described it as fraud. Fraud. And I'm telling you, he works for a big bank. Now, somebody better do something. When the word finally got out that this nonsense was going on, Bank of America made the announcement, we are halting all foreclosures. I didn't hear those gutless wonders of Chase saying anything, but you better believe if they haven't, they're gonna. Now, you guys at Chase, you know, I've talked about you before. I don't know whether you even know what doing the right thing is. But you can see where B of A is right now. And if you want some of the same heat, why don't you just go ahead and keep on foreclosing on people? I pray that at the end of this process, there isn't a Bank of America or a Chase left. If this stuff keeps going on, I mean, if they keep on doing what they're doing, acting in the same irresponsible manner, every single solitary aspect of this has been despicable in the way they relate to the community. The individual people that they're lending money to or not lending money to, just the government, the public at large, it's despicable. I hope if you guys don't change your ways that there is no longer a Bank of America, that you, this generation of B of A executives, will have signed a death warrant. I would love it for you cats to go down in history as the guys that did that. So this sheriff in Chicago has said, based upon these clowns talking about rubber stamping these foreclosure documents, he said, I ain't going to throw anybody out. You don't even know what you're doing. Dart said, this is so outrageous, and these poor families are being put through this day in and day out by people that don't do their jobs. You got that right. It's hard for me to stomach these people because this isn't just their bike we're taking away or their car. It's their house. He singled out Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and GMAC Ally Financial, saying if he doesn't receive affidavits from the institutions verifying the 1,000 to 1,500 eviction orders they've already filed with his office, he will not enforce them. I don't think it's going to take the banks a lot of time, he said. Meanwhile, Dart said his latest moratorium could be expanded to other institutions. He explained he already has asked county and state prosecutors if they have any information about questionable practices by other lenders. Dart's announcement comes a day after B of A announced plans to resume seizing more than 100,000 homes in 23 states, saying it had the legal right to do so despite accusations that documents used in the process were flawed. Ally Financial Incorporated's GMAC mortgage unit also is resuming foreclosures, and I'll bet you Chase never even stopped.
They don't have no comment or nothing.
Yeah, I'll bet they don't have any comment. A B of A spokesman said in an email that the bank already has reviewed the documents in Illinois and several other states. Our assessment shows underlying information provided as the for the basis for the... And then he passed out. A spokesman for GMAC, just some poor slob named James Olecki, some guy that works in the back. They pushed him out in front of a microphone. He said he had a similar statement saying the affected files have been reviewed and remediated appropriately. Then he went in the back and took a drink. Mr. Olecki said after he had a couple of blasts, quote, we are happy to respond to any questions from the sheriff related to this matter, and then he passed out. Dart said if the lenders have taken the proper steps, that it should be no problem to say so in writing. All I'm looking for from them is an affidavit saying, Sheriff, the cases you have in your system were all reviewed, all the documents were done correctly, they're all legally done, and you are not enforcing illegal orders. 2 years ago, Dart made national headlines when he stopped evictions. Yada, 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 yada. He put procedures in place that ensured his deputies were not putting on the street people who had paid their rent and were unaware of their landlord's financial problems. And he also sued Craigslist over ads he said promoted prostitution and headed the investigation into the alleged resale of burial plots. This is an ass-kicking cop. I love this guy.
Yeah, there's got to be something wrong with him, though, man.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I mean, again, no cop... See, that's real political. Cop get political, man. That's bad.
Yeah, he's got a point. Every time a cop try to be political, then that's bad.
That's what I said.
Oh, you guys are crazy. I think he's doing a great job. Jimmy McMillan was a hit at last night's New York gubernatorial debate, and we will tell you what he said that has people talking. Jimmy McMillan, coming up on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com.
It's... The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Remember, after every show, we post our show log on our website, on our homepage, philhendryshow.com. You go over there. In fact, if you go to our homepage, you will see a variety of things to enjoy. You'll see our Phil feed, P-H-I-L-P-H.
Yeah, that's bad on account of kids will think that's how you spell it.
Oh, get out of here. P-H-E-E-D?
Yeah.
Get out of here, man. This is for adults anyway. If you don't know how to spell feed by now... As in feed bin, as in feed bag, Doug, or whatever your name is, Bud.
Doug?
I thought it was Bud, but I wasn't sure, so I called you Doug. You dig me? Anyway, so there's the Phil feed, and we have on the left side, you'll see Follow Phil, which is our Twitter and Facebook links. We have our classic podcasts, our Phil rants. Over on the right side, our recent shows. So if you want to know, hey, I liked the show last night, I want to download that. Well, guess what? Go over to recent shows, and the last five are there. Or you can go into the archives. You go under Fresh Phil. That's where our recent shows are. And Classic Phil, that's where our classic shows are. And then we have a list of our affiliates over there at philhendryshow.com. Jimmy McMillan of the Rent is Too Damn High Party upstages Carl Paladino and Andrew Cuomo. Long Island Democrat Andrew Cuomo and Republican Carl Paladino may be the only two candidates in New York that polls suggest have a plausible chance to win the governorship, but it was Jimmy McMillan who stole the show at last night's debate with a simple message, the rent is too damn high. The rent is too damn high party candidate stole the show during the gubernatorial debate at Hofstra University on Long Island. Here is Jimmy McMillan of the rent is too damn high party delivering his opening remarks at yesterday's New York gubernatorial debate.
I represent the rent is too damn high party. People are working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week, and some a third job. Women can't afford to take care of their children, feed their children breakfast, lunch, and dinner. My main job is to provide a roof over your head, food on the table, and money in your pocket. This is politics as usual. Playing a silly game, and it's not going to happen. The rent too damn high movement, the people I'm here to represent can't afford to pay their rent. They're being laid off right now as I speak. They can't eat breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Listen, someone's stomach, your child's stomach just growled. Did you hear it? Got to listen like me.
Okay.
Let's talk about the issue.
People can't afford to pay their rent. 30 seconds for you, sir.
Well, you didn't give him 30 seconds. I just saw you didn't give him 30 seconds, you big mouth.
What are you talking about?
Is he supposed to get 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Well, that big mouth butted in before it was 30 seconds. You racist?
That's not racism just because he came in 2 seconds early.
I think it was. On every question, McMillan stuck to his message concerning soaring rent, including during a question about gay marriage.
As a karate expert, I will not talk about anyone up here because our children can't afford to live anywhere. Nowhere. There's nowhere to go. Once again, why? You said it. The rent is too damn high.
Thank you, Mr. McMillan. Mr. Cuomo.
First, I'm with Jimmy. The rent is too damn high.
Rent too damn high, party for you. If you want to marry a shoe, I'll marry you.
The McMillan campaign website produced a song to express his platform.
Rent. It's too damn high. Crying out loud. Crying out
hey,
loud.
Hey, this is me, Jimmy McMillan. Can we talk?
Yeah.
You know, I'm concerned. Where your children going to live when they become adults and they have children? Where
are you
stay?
Gay?
You know, following the attack on the World Trade Center, you know, things just rampage out of control. But you've been voting like you don't even care. For crying out loud, what you need to see to ask you to change your voting habits? Something is wrong. And your children and your grandchildren. I've been fighting. I've been protesting at Cooper Union. Rent.
Yeah, okay, that's great.
Mike, I felt this going up my leg.
So there is Jimmy McMillan. I'd like to play the whole thing, Jimmy, but it sucks. So, no, it's good. It's good. It's just that this is better. Anyway, sporting a throwback mustache and beard and wearing black gloves, it's not throwback. It's for old guys like us. I think Jimmy's about my age. It's a good look.
Yeah, I like the black gloves.
It's a good look. Sporting a throwback mustache and beard and wearing black gloves, he repeated refrain, his repeated refrain of the rent is too damn high, won over the audience and sent curious New Yorkers flocking to the internet on Tuesday morning. You know, seriously, if you give people a phrase, just like Johnny Cochran, if it don't fit, you must acquit. That's what people respond to. His name popped up all over Twitter and his own website. Rentistoodamnhigh.org crashed at points during the morning. McMillan said he appreciated the love and was gratified he stole the show. The mustache and the rent is too damn high is what got me here, he quipped. One thing most New Yorkers wanted to know, who is Jimmy McMillan? Well, he's a 64-year-old retired postal worker from Flatbush. He served in Vietnam, and he cited his service as the reason he wore gloves on stage for the debate. The chemicals of Agent Orange, dioxin, and a lot of other chemicals mixed up, I would get sick, he explained after the debate with Carl Palladino and others. I know I'm not going to be able to breathe if I take them off. It could be psychological. I don't know, but I just put them on, and I wear them anyway. So he thinks he has these chemicals all over his hands from Vietnam. This isn't McMillan's first foray into politics. He ran for mayor in the city in 2005, but he pulled in less than 1% of the vote. He was criticized for blaming soaring rents on, quote, Jewish landlords. Well, now. In Monday night's debate, McMillan touted lower rents as the cure for the state's economic ills. It all boils down to one thing, those Jews. No, he said the rent's too damn high.
Yeah, but he did say about Jews and stuff.
Now, what did he say that?
I don't know, and, you know, it's too bad because he was funny until I heard that. But,
yeah, black people are always saying that.
Oh, they're not always saying it, man.
All right, well, no, I don't want to talk about it right now, okay? Our show is produced by Jason Rance, technical director Charles Wagon, our associate producer and screener Dan Northcraft. Dan, I hope you get better. I hear you got a cold. Did a great job again, as usual. Tonight! Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Good night from El Pacifico.
You blew it!
Phil Hendry.